It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Or at least 50% of the show today. Mike Ward on assignment. Can't wait to get him back into the state of Alabama. He's hunting turkeys elsewhere, and you got to, as turkey season ended yesterday here in Alabama. But Mike's on assignment hunting them in other states. We'll get more on that coming up. But it's always a great treat to get my friend on the show. He's the man, Captain Bobby Abrascato, with A-Team Fishing Adventures. And we kind of set up, do this, well, we talk to him more than that, but we quarterly kind of get him on to talk about the state of speckled trout. In other words, the seasons of the year and chasing speckled trout and redfish. And he joins us now, Captain Bobby.
Hey, that's it. You know, and that, you mentioned seasons, and that kind of implies a calendar thing, but it's really about four different, I can't think of a different word to use than seasons, but periods might be a better reference for it, because what we're going to talk about here is what's going on right now, and they don't know that they're not supposed to be, if they were looking at a calendar, they're not supposed to be where they are right now. So
yeah, they're not following our script for sure. But but it is I say seasons because I mean it's really, yeah, there's a, it's just a
for
throwaway
lack of a
word.
Better word.
You've taught me over time it's about temperature too, right?
It's all about temperature. Yep.
And so those are so that sometimes those temperatures arrive weeks late, weeks early, to say it's on the calendar is not right. So where, water temperature wise, do the fish think they are? I mean, where are they?
Well, and let's throw one more thing in before we start touching on this, is the other thing too that we all are aware of is the lack of rain. We have had zero, well, up until very recently, practically zero local rain. And so, you know, the rivers that they spend their winter in and transition out of, as the water temperature warms and salinity goes down in the rivers, hadn't been happening. So we've got water temperatures that are in the early spring range and salinity levels that are near Gulf of Mexico salinity levels in the rivers. So you have those two things going on that are basically where the fish should have long since been out of the rivers, you know, sometimes as early as mid-March, but very rarely is it later. I used to say tax day. Yeah. And heck, we're coming up on the middle of May now, and there's still some fish, you know, that are still in these rivers. And I'm talking about very recently I've caught fish up in the rivers in the same places I was catching them in November and December.
That's what I was going to say, too. I mean, you say, yes, yeah, spring, but it is spring and fall are pretty similar, you know, temperature.
Yep, mirror images almost.
Temperature-wise, but the difference is in fall, we're always talking about higher salinity. You know, because we just have localized rain. So you're kind of in a somewhat of a mirror image now of like a fall, right?
Like a fall deal. Well, you know, and like I said, before you and I went on the air, I was sort of talking about it. It's like, you know, it's with the fish being up in the rivers, I hope I don't sound like I'm complaining. I don't care where I catch them.
Right.
It doesn't bother me where I catch them. It's so different to be catching them in the areas that I'm catching them this late into the spring when they should have long since been moved out of those rivers. But the positive to it is, you know, this is obviously our windiest time of the year. So a lot of times we'd either have to struggle with trips, trying to make fish bite in areas that we could get to due to the wind, or cancel and just not go, you know. And whereas with these fish staying up in these rivers, you know, in the early, what I call the early spring transition, we're still able to fish on some pretty nasty days that otherwise would have been blown out. So therefore is the reason I don't complain where I'm catching them, as long as I'm catching them.
Hey, what is that doing to, like, the reproduction side? We'll get back to the catching side, but, you know, I'm a science nerd. So, like, what is it doing to them on reproduction?
That is such a great question, and I'm glad you asked that, because I was going to touch on that. They need a high salinity level just to start their spawn. And so some of the fish, I mean, some of the salinity levels are in that, in the range that's acceptable to them. The reason I can tell you this is some of the fish that we've kept and cleaned out of those are loaded with roe like they would be in an early spring, and they wouldn't be doing that. You know, they got the male trout in there that are drunk. You can really tell when they're spawning, because when you're reeling in a male trout, you can hear him drumming when he's halfway in. And then when you get him in the boat, he's drumming like crazy. That's a spawning school. And then some of the fish we've kept are loaded with roe, and that you very rarely will catch fish with roe in them in the fall and the winter, because they're in the lower salinity areas and they're not spawning. So we've got to tell you up there, you know.
Yeah, but my worry is, okay, so the salinity's up there, full road, those triggers are there, high enough salinity, but, you know, I'm always thinking about this time of year, the fish have pushed out of the rivers, and they're spawning over hard bottom, like beaches and oyster reefs and all that, but if they're up in the rivers, they don't have that same, I wonder what they're going to do.
No, there's still that kind of bottom available to them. That's another thing too. They know what to do to have a successful spawn, and so they're not going to spawn over mud. They'll spawn over hard substrate or rock or shell or grass, which we have several of the rivers have good grass bottoms. Again, the science people that I've talked to really get more encouraged about the trout spawn when we have so high salinity years versus low salinity years, because they spawn better. Now, this is what they're telling me.
No, it makes sense, the salinity's right. Yeah. I just didn't know if the structure to spawn
the bottom,
on.
Right. Yeah. They know when they need to be over, you know what I'm saying? And and there's plenty of that, too, you know, which there's, you know, obviously you get out in some of these bays and the grassy areas, you know, on the south end, obviously a lot of that, but there's plenty of that in those rivers, and they know it, and that's what they'll be over. So, yeah.
Okay.
I don't think we have a problem there. I just think it's just being, you know, again, I hope I don't sound like I'm complaining, but
it's
so different from anything that I've ever dealt with this time of year is where we're catching them. That's also to say, I'm still kind of seeing kitchen fish out in the fall and out in the northern.
Hey, I had a little trouble hearing you there.
Oh. Let me stick my hand up in the air again.
There you go. Okay, good. You were saying what?
Well, what I was saying is I'm catching very few fish down on the very south end of the bay. Everything I'm catching outside of the rivers right now is still in the northern part of the bay. I mean, northern parts of the sound. And if you look at
it's
that
crazy
geography, you'll see that there's a lot of bayous and creeks and things like that that they're coming out of. And so I think those fish are making that transition. But this is more like what I would consider early April, maybe, something like that.
Would eventually, if we stayed in this, let's say we have a little rise on the river now, and some more fresh water, you know, after the rains. But if that wouldn't happen, I guess they'd eventually get run out by temperature. Do you think it would get too hot?
I would think because they're not getting the aeration,
yeah,
the oxygenation. I would think, but again, I don't have anything to go by. You know, the way it's going right now, it's, you know, who knows? We might be catching them in June up in those rivers, you know.
Wouldn't
so
that be
who
crazy?
Knows, but
that would be
it
nuts.
Would be crazy. It's crazy enough for me catching them when I'm catching them right now. But, man, it's, you know, we're getting some local rain now, and I think that's going to have a big effect on it. I think that might, you know, finally push them into that full true transition where everything except maybe your resident fish are going to be out of there, you know. As far as like, you know, if it does, it doesn't happen, you know, there's no reason for them to leave, you know?
Yeah. And let's talk about that. The other component, we always talk about what the fish are doing, but what the fish are doing other than spawning routine, they're driven by what the bait's doing. So what's the bait look like up there?
Another great question. I haven't seen any shrimp activity in the sound, and surprisingly, the only shrimp in the form of like bird schools that I typically would be seeing in the late April range, say mid to late April through now. You know, typically I'm seeing bird schools and I'm seeing shrimp down in the sound. I've not seen any of that. The only time I saw it, believe it or not, was about 3 weeks ago in April up in Fowl River. There was a big bird school on shrimp. And I'm going like, what? I'm running, coming down the river. And I'm looking, I'm going like, and it's just starting to break day, and I look, and it's slick calm, and I see some gulls dive, and I said, so I slowed down, and I watch, I said, that's shrimp. And sure enough, we pull into it, and about, I don't know, it was a classic, you know, bird school, shrimp school, like you see up in the Delta, up in Fowl River in
April.
Mid to late April.
Wow. It is a weird year.
It is weird, dude.
So the bait, so now, they got everything they need. The bait is up in the river, salinity is high enough. Why the heck would they come out?
Why would they come out? They don't need to, you know. Now, again, with some of the local rain that we're starting to get now, I think you may see some of that start to change. But, again, we may be talking again in a couple of weeks, having the same conversation. Who knows, you know. But that's the only – as far as shrimp goes. Now, there's always mullet and there's always pogies around, and which kind of leads me to what we were going to talk about, too, is like I'm leaving right now, and I'm still – you always catch fish – on a shrimp imitation or shrimp, if you want to use shrimp under a cork, that's the you know, that's if you're not catching them on that, your next step is dynamite, you know. But this time of year, this usually that's about all I'll have tied on when we're leaving the dock. Now I'm leaving with a couple popping corks on and topwaters and slick lures and slick juniors tied onto the rest of the rods, because there's not any shrimp around to speak of, and they're really active on some of those swim type baits. And so, you know, that's been a real positive from that standpoint, some of the fish that I'm catching both in the rivers and, you know, out in the flats, kind of where they're starting to supposed to be. So that's another positive of not having the shrimp around. Now, again, I'm not going to complain when the shrimp show up, because I don't care. Again, I don't care how I catch them or where I catch them, as long as I'm catching them, you know.
Right.
I'm happy. So, but right now I'm leaving with fewer corks tied on to the rods than I typically would be using, you know, leaving with this time of year.
Are you seeing, and we just got about a minute or two before the break, and then we'll come back. Are you, you said the bird school, are you seeing slicks in the rivers?
Oh yeah, seeing that too.
Wow.
Yeah, matter of fact, I sent Dalton in the other morning on the weekly report. I sent right when they called, I had just taken a picture of the slick that we were fishing, that we located our fish up in one of the rivers. Matter of fact, if you look a little closely, it's not real hard to figure out where I was when I took the picture. But yes, they definitely are slick, and you know, if you get a little bit of chop on the water, you know, they're slicking just like it would be doing out in Sound. You know,
wow.
So yeah.
That is okay. Well, we're going to pick this up. We're coming right back. More with Captain Bobby Abrascato. It's, you know, we do this at least four times a year. It's just an odd transition we're in here, which means we've got to pay more attention, take more notes. We'll do that when we come back. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward on assignment. We'll get him back here next week with an out-of-state turkey report. I got a little preview. I think it's going to be a good report, so we'll get to that. But it's always great to have my friend and the man behind A-Team Fishing Adventures, Captain Bobby Abrascato, on with us. And, you know, we do this quarterly, talking about these transitions, and this is one I'm going to have to put a star or an asterisk on, because this is different than the previous conversations. Usually we're talking about, well, you know, it's been the rivers are high, Bobby, and you know, a lot of fresh water coming down and where the trout moved. That is, until this recent rain, we hadn't had anything, man.
Nothing. No rain to speak of, and that shows up, you know. It's you know, it's kind of funny, too, what you just said about, you know, having this conversation as we go through these transitional periods and into the winter periods and out of that into summer and so on and so forth. You could probably take this conversation we had 4 years ago and plug it in, mm-hmm. and it'd be exactly the same thing. This ain't one of them years.
No, that's why I have to make a note on it and say, hey, if I run this as a best of, I gotta put a note on here and say, well, this was in 2026. Your mileage may vary here in other years. you know, and I thought I was going to, you know, start thinking about this time of year and something you and I both love, and wade fishing. And, you know, I was like, maybe that's not the go-to right now. I mean, I'm sure there's some fish that do everything, right? Even though a bulk will be in a river, some will be out front. But it's, you know, what have you gotten any reports, or have you dabbled in it?
I have. I've been wade fishing, but everything that I've caught has been on the northern end of the Sound. I've had two wade trips down to the island, one this week and one last week. Last week we made three long wades, three of us, three long wades, never got a bite. And then this week, two of us went down there, made two long wades, never got a bite.
That's all I need to know.
I can see if you make like a little 100-yard wade and go back to the boat. Well, they're not here yet. I'm talking about we covered some water.
Yeah, and Bobby moves like his former track star self. I mean, you try to wade behind you, I was like, is that Bobby down there? It looks like a dot.
It looks like, yeah, that's what somebody was telling me the other day. They said, man, you got a rooster tail coming off of you when you're wading. But, you know, the key with that wade fishing is finding the fish. And as you know, when we find them, we stop, you know. Mm-hmm. But, man, we covered some water. So, I'm going to keep trying when the conditions allow for it.
I wonder if they do that. I wonder, like, do they skip that this year? Although they're in summertime they're on the beach too. Usually,
yep.
So I just wonder when they're going to get there.
I don't know, because this is not particularly late for that, for them not to be there. Usually by mid-May, I'm catching them down there. Back in 2001, I caught my biggest trout of my life, and we'd been catching for about a week down there on my wife's birthday, which is April 25th. So, you know, and we'd been catching for a week by then, you know. So that was the third week of April we were catching them. But typically it's more like now till on into June, you know, or even July, and then you start catching them on the inside and outside beaches by then. But I can tell you right now, based on what I've seen over the last 2 weeks, I'm going to check it again if I get a chance and the conditions are right, because you probably know this too, is they almost show up overnight. Everything's there. There was plenty of bait, a lot of glass minnows, which they feed on when there's no shrimp. There's a lot of small mullet right up on the beach. But every bit of said bait didn't have a care in the world. I never saw them blowing up on anything. I never saw them getting nervous, nothing. I mean, matter of fact, if a lot of times the only time they were getting spooked was when the topwaters were dragging through the rafts of the mullet and the glass minnows. That's the only time they'd ever move, you know. So I don't know. I didn't see anything that blew my skirt up, and that was with a lot of casts and two trips. So, but on the flip side of that, I've had, you know, I'm not going to call them record books, but phenomenal wade trips on the north side, the days that we've gotten in the water, all the way from the Mississippi line all the way back to the Dolphin Island Bridge. I hate to call them record trips, but they were as good as it gets. I mean, when we hit the fish, we go sometimes 2 hours, you know, with three or four of us standing shoulder to shoulder catching them, and that's when it's good, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to kind of pick your brain on wade fishing today, too, and kind of like walking through, number one, you just talked about, and you know, I've witnessed it. Another thing, by the way, I gauge when the wade fishing turns on, is Bobby wading in waders or is he wet wading? That's the other thing. That's like, you get started early enough that you start, you know, you're in waders sometimes before it warms up enough, and then you transition to wet wading. This year, it'll be go ahead and start with the wet wading, I guess, by the time they get down on Dolphin Island. Right now, it might have been.
That's right.
Yeah.
I've worn waders one time this year, and there's a couple mornings I wished, at least the first part of it, I had waders on, because it was a little chilly, and then getting out of the water and running to the next wade while you're wet was chilly, you know. So there were a couple of days that I kind of wished I had worn waders, and I probably should have. But man, you know this both from duck hunting and wade fishing. If I don't have to wear them, I'm not going to wear them.
Right.
It's not so much the wading in them; it's the going back to the boat in them. That's the thing that's the pain in the butt, you know.
So, it slows you down.
Yeah, it does slow you down, and it's, you know, you get a pair of wet waders, 3 mil waders, wet walking, you know, quarter mile or a half mile back to the boat down the beach. I mean, that's exhausting, you know. So that's exhausting for a young person. I ain't a young person, you know. So if I don't have to wear them, I don't like to wear them. And the couple of 3 weeks ago, I had a group and we were scheduled to wade. And I think the trip before that, I had worn waders. And I said, I had them in my truck that morning, and I drove down there to meet them. And the guy said, you're wearing waders? I said, no, I took them out of my truck so I wouldn't wuss out and put them on. So I'm going, you know, I'm going without. And he said, well, I will too then. And so I let him jump in first. And how he did, you know?
So, I mean,
it's not too bad. As you know, once you get moving and catching fish, you kind of forget about it, you know. But I'm telling you, I waded this week and it's still
chilly.
I mean, it ain't cold, but it's you know you're in the water at daybreak this time of year. This week.
It's not that bathtub effect when you get in. You're like,
not unless you're into ice bath.
So yeah, no joke. There's my ice bath. So you get in. Obviously, what Bobby said earlier, y'all hear, watch it over time. He's moving constantly. I want you. You're not, until you get on fish, you're not waiting. I mean, and you're talking a couple cast and you're moving. I mean, you're not sitting there picking apart a little area.
No. Usually, any of the places where there's a little feature to the bottom, like for example, the West End, you know, when you start hitting those, you know what I'm talking about. You'll go through a stretch where it's basically flat, and then you start hitting those bar systems, those bars that run, you know, anywhere from 45 degrees to 90 degrees mm-hmm. off the beach. Usually when I hit one of those bar systems, there's like three good target areas. There's the tip of the bar, the end of the bar, which is the end of the bar going out from the beach, then the trough in between the two bars, and then I always make a few casts right up on the beach in the trough. There's a little right where the bar, the the bar, one bar ends and there's a trough and there's another, and I always make a good cast right in there. Usually one of those three places, if there's going to be some fish here, you're going to get bit, you know. And usually if you make those two or three good casts, good quality casts there, and don't get bit, it's time to keep, go ahead and get moving. Because as you've seen, once you find those, it's not a one here, one there thing. Once you find them, usually on those wade trips like that, it's a they stays pretty steady until that school gets kind of, you know, fished out and you got to move on. But yeah, there's no sense in standing in one spot if you're not getting bit, unless you're using bait.
Right.
But if you're casting, you just got to keep on the move until you find something. That's the whole. And another thing too, let me go off on just one little tangent here on this. I see this happen a lot, and you've seen it happen too, is I'll see people drive down to this great wade spot, pull their boat up, put the anchor out, step out of the boat and stand right next to the boat and fish.
Yeah, yes.
And it kind of
you might as well just stay in the boat, yeah.
Just stay in the boat. You got the comfort of the boat. You got your drinks there and all your tackle and pliers and everything else. If you're going to do that, the whole idea is to get out and be stealthy. So I put the boat, I put the boat probably 50 yards from where my true target area is. I start casting right away as soon as I get in the water, but I don't want that boat anywhere near me because, as you well know, you get in that water, especially when you're walking back up to your boat on a little breezy day, you can hear that boat slap
yep.
from 100 yards away, and you can hear another boat running down the beach from a mile away, you know, so that boat is putting out a lot of noise on that hard bottom, and that's, to me, I just don't have nearly the success at some of those places fishing out of the boat than I do getting in the water with them, you know. So the tip being, you know, if you're going to do it, get away from the boat. You know, don't stand right next to the boat. Like you said, just stay in the boat if you're going to do that.
Yeah, and I want to go back to something you said, too, that the prime areas, what features? And we talk about troughs, you talk about – so, but somebody picking those apart. I mean, the troughs, sometimes the bars are – you know, a parallel, sometimes they're horizontal, often they're at 45 degrees to the banks, right? I mean, there's sometimes the deepest water is up by the beach and the shallower water is 50 yards away. I mean, it's not always the same.
It's not always the same. But the key thing to it, and you just said it, is features. Whether it be the bar systems I was talking about that run, you know, out from the beach, or like you're talking about some of those places where they have just mounds where you'll be in waist deep or, you know, almost chest deep water right up next to the beach, but you're throwing out there and you can see the little mound out there. But any of those kind of features of the things, I think that the trout use to ambush their prey, you know, something that gives them a place to ambush their prey. Even though you can still catch some moving fish on some of the flat areas, anything that's got any kind of undulation to me is a target area, you know. And I really, my favorite of those systems that run, you know, out from the beach, somewhere around 45 to 90 degrees out from the beach. Those are my favorites because a lot of times you hit those and you'll have a whole series of six or eight in a row of those things. And man, that's a lot of targets right there, you know. So those are some of my favorite type of places. You know, and then the other thing, too, that we talked about in the last segment is if you're targeting spawning fish, which is what these are, you better be around some hard bottom. You better be around some grass. You better be around some sand holes. You better be around some oysters because that's where the fish are going to be. You're only going to catch, like, moving schools of fish over mud, which, obviously, you don't want to be wading in anyway because you're going to wade in as much mud as you are water, you know.
100%. Yeah, you get right back to it. Coming right back with Captain Bobby Abrascato from 18 Fishing Adventures. We're wading. We're trying to break down these wades out there. And we're also going to talk about what he's throwing. It's all straight ahead. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward will be back with us next week. Right now, we've got our buddy Captain Bobby Abrascato from 18 Fishing Adventures talking about this not normal bay pattern of Fisher North, and they are going to start to transition at some point. But you know, Bobby, you said, I mean, your trips. It doesn't matter if the wind blows, you can get up in these tidal rivers and you're still catching fish here in May.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And again, I think some of that's probably going to wrap. I'm thinking with this local rain that we've had over the last week or so, this week and then a little bit last week, I think that's pretty well going to do it. I noticed when I crossed a couple of the rivers late this week that some of them had really muddied up. So I think that's probably going to flush the rest of probably what we call non-resident fish out of there. You'll see this tree, plus the warm-up now, too. You know, we're actually getting a warm-up, too, so they're going to bring the water temperature up. So those things will go into, you know, I hate to even use this word, a normal springtime transition. It's occurring in mid-May. Typically, we're at 75-degree water temperature, and we're talking about our summertime pattern that we're going into.
Right.
We ain't even close to that yet.
Yeah, that means we're going to have an addendum. We're going to have to do this again at the end of this month or beginning of June and start talking about true summer pattern. We're breaking down wade fishing a second ago, and you're talking about bottom. You need hard bottom. Those fish are going to be around hard bottom to spawn. You also pointed out grass. You know, and grass is not everywhere, but it is in some places. Some years the grass is not where it was the year before, and there's a new spot of it. You know, it's, I mean, how much grass do you consider? Is it, hey, I just saw a little piece on the bottom, or is it how much grass you go, okay, man, this is a spot?
I like to get it where I can see. If I'm running in the boat, where I can actually see it, like when I'm doing some like an early scout trips for where I'm thinking about fishing, you know, to where I can see it, see, you know, extended patches of it. Like you just mentioned, you know, a 1x1 square foot patch of grass in the middle of a big sand flat or mud flat's not going to do it. You know, you want a whole stretch of grass because there's going to be massive schools of fish and bait on that. And so that you know, it's going to be something pretty big, you know. So, you know, you take like the West End, for example, is a classic place. You know, what do you got, 8-9 miles mm-hmm. of bar systems with grass. You can take places like Grand Bay, just almost completely covered with grass, you know, almost throughout the whole system there. You move back towards the east a little bit from there, Portersville and Heron, you're talking, you know, the water doesn't get as clear there, and I think that's the reason it doesn't support grass growth, but there's tons of shell there. That's when I start thinking about shell, when I start moving back to the east, the shoals, Dolphin Island Bay, those areas. I'm not thinking about grass there. I'm thinking about shell.
Yeah,
anytime you've been, if you've been in the water any of those places, you know that there is a lot of good hard shell bottom in some of those places. So, but anyway, to your question, I want a pretty extended amount of it. Just if I see a little patch here, patch there. And some of that's going on, kind of what you were starting when you first started talking in the segment. You mentioned that where grass is, you know, sometimes it's here and sometimes I've noticed really better grass growth over the last number of years moving mm-hmm. further back to the east than we've had for many, many years. You know, I'm talking about places up in Portersville. I don't ever remember really being – now, old-timers, I guess I am now, too, but they'll go like, oh, yeah, they used to all be grass through here. And I hear the stories about up the bay on the west side of the bay.
I hope it continues because it does nothing but produce more fish.
I do, too. I think what went on, you know, over the last couple of years with the bay is probably going to hamper some of that in the mm-hmm. bay. But as far as the sound goes, especially when you get, you know, stretches like we're having this. I mean, I'm talking about this water down there that's clear as I've ever seen it for this time of year. And that supports grass growth. You know, they have, it's just like your yard. It's got to have some sun, you mm-hmm. know. And if you're not getting light penetration, the grass ain't going to grow. Well, some of those areas are staying clear, you know, more and more now. And I think that's supporting that grass growth. I just don't, you know, some of the areas around Portersville that I traditionally think of as, and they're shell, don't get me wrong, that's not going anywhere, but there's places that have grass now that's supporting, you know, a fishery that I would consider to be, you know fishing over grass. You know, then you get down towards Grand Bay, west of Point of Pines, and that's always had grass, and it'll probably always will have grass because it stays so clear down there. That's another reason those oyster farms are so successful down there. The water stays so clear and salty, you know, and so that supports that growth. But again, I'm seeing that back more to the east now. So I'm hoping, I'm like you just said, I'm hoping that continues.
People probably picked up on this and I'm maybe spilling beans here, but if you, what you said, if people probably picked up, if I'm going on a scouting trip, you know, you, it's tough to see that grass when it's 5:30 in the morning and you're running down there to go wade. But if you take a trip when the sun is up top and high, right, and you have these clear water conditions, you can go through and mark whether you do like we all did in the old days, say, well, it's next to that clump up on the beach or you know where that old bucket was or whatever, you know, instead of doing that. But you can go in there with your GPS And Mark, hey, this is where at the break of day, this is where I need to be sitting. And you're, even though you can't see it then, you found it the day before whenever you're scouting, and you know you're in the right spot. There's the grass.
Absolutely. You just nailed it right there. That's the whole deal. And, you know, not only looking at the grass, but when you're running. So a lot of times, like in the earlier spring, you know, when I'm not in the water yet or I'm just looking for some of that stuff, not only am I looking for grass, but you, as you're running along at half speed on your way in from your trip at midday, mm-hmm. when you've got, like you said, a big high sun, you can see all that. And you'll see the bait over it. And that's the other thing. I go, like, ooh, this looks pretty good right here, you know. So this is maybe where I'm going to think about starting, you know, tomorrow or next week when I go wade. Is that just exactly what you're talking about? So I'm looking, you know, you might could see trout, you know, when you're running like that. I think, you know, sometimes you can, but not very often. I'm looking for more of the things that the trout are looking for.
Well, yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen yet that I've seen the fish. I mean, maybe I could see a slick or something. I don't, my eyes aren't as good, but I'm looking for, oh, look at that patch of grass. And that patch of grass, well, there's a break here, but it picks up 100 yards later. So I know I can push right through there and I know I'm in the right area.
Yep. So I'm looking for more of the environment and the bait that holds the trout than truly seeing the trout, you know. That's how I scout those. It's just like you said, and you know, some of the things you were talking about, even with a nice GPS system like I have, I still go, okay, that's right. There's a big piece of driftwood right here. Yeah, that's what the one I'm looking for. Right there.
So we can't get rid of that old habits, Mark. Man. Old habits.
I know. I'm going like. There's that piece of that bucket. Yeah.
Right. Okay, I mean, how many times over the years people would like, we told the story, where'd you catch them? Okay, you know where the bucket is, right next to the old styrofoam cooler? Oh, yeah, that stretch right there was money this morning.
Yeah. You know that next to last stand of canes down there?
These are conversations, y'all, that we actually have had. So, So let's talk about, talk about the bait too. Shrimp is always a big part of what we talk about. But this is, I get excited when I see finger mullet this time of year. I guess they're associating with that grass, or I don't know why they're there, but they're there.
It could be for protection or whatever. It may have something to do with their diet. Who knows? There's little things that they eat in that grass, and grass itself, you know, could have something to do with that, or just simply, like I said, just for protection. But yeah, they love being over that grass, you know, and so that's the couple things I look for. And of course, then again, that, you know, just like the old saying of match the hatch, that's where you're going in there with those mullet imitations when you start doing that type of fishing, topwater lures, slick lures, which is a newer version of our new soft version of a mirror lure that we use forever. So those are the lures that I'm having in my wade box and tied onto my rod. And what I usually do, I carry a second rod with me. I got my wade belt set up where I can stick another rod back there. Usually I'll have like a top water on and then something subsurface. And I'm so rare to keep fish, but I love throwing a top water early in the morning just because of the excitement of it. But it's also a great way to locate fish. But as you well know, I carry a little wade net with me, and mm-hmm. I still won't net a trout with a, because if you net a trout with a top water with a wade net, you're down for 20 minutes. I mean, you know, while your buddy's over there whacking them, trying to get the stupid lure out of the fish and out of the net. So I don't net them. I bring that in case I catch I'm catching some flounder now, but if I catch something I really want to keep, I'll put them on there. But that's what I've gotten to like over these slick lures, which is a single hook lure. And you know, you can still get that in your hand when you're trying to grab a fish, but 99 out of 100 fish you catch is going to have that hook, that one single hook in his mouth, and that's a lot less chance of you getting it in your hand. So usually what I'll do is I'll catch a few fish on top water, and then I'll switch pretty well right over to that
okay.
thing.
Okay, that was the next. Yeah, you got me. Like, when do you say? Because it is darn fun to catch them on a hard top water, but then there's always this period of time you're like, if the fishing's been good and then it slows down for a second, you'll see me. I'm like, I gotta switch. I gotta go subsurface. But when do you go? I mean, when do you go, hey, this is top water is done for the day?
Well, the fish tell me usually when it's done, but I've been kind of getting off of it a little earlier now just because of the hassle of dealing with the top water and that sort of thing. You know, because you can pretty well switch right over if you're on them and they're hitting top water, something that's just under the surface like that, and they'll continue to hit it. I do it. If I'm fishing by myself or just maybe fun fishing with a buddy or something, I'll go ahead and keep throwing top water. It takes longer to get the fish off, which means fewer fish. you know, and you got to really take your time getting the fish, you know, getting your hand on the fish and whatnot. But like you just said, it's so much fun to do it. So I sacrifice maybe a few casts just because I love topwater fishing. And let me again go off on one of my tangents here, and that we've never talked about this, but what I do when I got a fish on a topwater, even if it's still almost dark in the morning, as soon as I know that fish is coming in, I put my sunglasses on. And the reason being, and you've had this happen before, you're at, you know, at least chest level, waist level, but dang near face level with that fish coming in with a mouthful of treble hooks in him and a loaded up rod, and they shake that thing loose. You know, it's coming right at you. And I've had them hit me in the face. I've had them hit me in the hair, you know, and just close enough to where I just don't want them hitting me in the eyes, you know. And so let me throw that out there, just encourage you to either wear a pair, bring a pair of safety glasses, or put your sunglasses on as, as the fish is coming in. Go ahead and put your sunglasses on, and because it'll happen to you, I can promise you. And and you know the people that'll tell you, oh yeah, it's happened to me before. So just kind of a thought there, just a little safety tip for you.
Well said. Coming right back, more Captain Bobby Abrascato right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward will be back with us soon. He's going to be jealous that he missed our conversation with Captain Bobby Abrascato from A-Team Fishing Adventures. By the way, too, we will remind folks here at the end of the hour, but if people want to get a trip booked with you, Captain Bobby, how do they do it?
The easiest way, Sean, is A-TeamFishing.com, like the old Mr. T Show, A-Team Fishing, and it's got our contact info on there, which has a phone number and an emailable contact us form, and you can hit us either way, and we will get you. Let me back up and say, Miss Kim, we'll get you booked up.
it could be y'all. It could be summertime fishing. You could even look forward to fall fishing. All that with Captain Bobby. We're talking about the wade fishing. We talked about the topwater and the hard bait, but you're going to a slick. Even earlier, remember we used to, you know, I've been doing this long enough that we were even going to hard baits subsurface, right? What we get the sun to get up a little bit more, this top water, you know, at a floating top water bait bite would slow down, and then we go to a hard bait with a lip, kind of a diving, you know, diving minnow kind of bait, and catch them on that. But the slick lure is kind of taking place of that, right?
It has for me, because the versatility, those lures that you just mentioned, they still work. I mean, we caught zillions of fish on those lures, and they still would catch that many fish. What you got
but
now
they're a pain.
With this lure,
yeah,
though,
they're a pain to get all hooks
they're
out.
They're a pain because, you got to get the hooks out. You know, if you want to make a color change or a lure change, you got to cut off and retie, you know, which getting back to our age thing here is not as easy as it used to be.
No.
Whereas this lure has one big single hook, and It hooks the fish in the mouth. It's very easy and a lot less. Very, 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 very rarely do they gut hook themselves. They're almost always hooked in the top part of the mouth, which is very easy to get them off and get them back in the water. But the other thing is, too, is like you're talking about, is the light starts to change. You know, say it goes from you know, pre-dawn darkness as the sun gets up a little bit, and you want to kind of, like I'm maybe throwing like a brighter color lure in that kind of condition, and I want to subtle the lure up. I don't have to cut and retie anything. I just take the lure off like you would a grub and slide the different color I want. Or if the lure gets torn up, you know, it's not a matter of retying. You just slide it off and put the new color or whatever you want to put on there. So it's just a lot more user-friendly. It's easier on the fish. Those are the two things. And I tell the people that own it, I say, you know, y'all don't ever talk about that. You talk about how many fish it catches. A lot of lures catch fish. You need to be talking about, you know, the versatility and the ease of use of the lure too, you know, because that actually helps you catch more fish. You know, you're in the water more, you know.
100%.
And you start talking about some of the lures like you're talking about too is, you know, mirror lure, for example, with two or three treble hooks on it. I mean, those fish will hit it and you'll still miss them. But this lure, even with just a single hook, because it's soft, you hook as many, if not more, fish. Because the lure's soft, even with just a single hook on there, you know, so you're actually, you know, bite for bite, it's about tit for tat. So just because you think you're giving up these treble hooks, you're not losing, you're not missing out on fish. You know, that thing, they hit that thing, and it's they hold on to it, you know, till you can get the hook into them, you know. So it's a very, and I'm not sponsored by them. I don't, you know, it's a lure I use because it works, you know. So I'm you know, I don't have a dog in the sponsorship fight with them, you know.
I've watched it from when you first started using them, you know, and just watched how they just work great. And of course, yes, then there's that when you're really into the fish, how fast you can cast out and catch another one is also good. Working those baits subsurface too, are you using, I mean, I probably the answer is all the above. Are you using steady retrieve or using stop go, or what do you do with that lure?
It's more of a stop go thing. They have some good natural action, you know, but it's not a lure like you were talking about, like the lip crankbait type lures that have that type of action where you can just throw it out and reel it back in. I call it an idiot presentation where you just throw it out and reel it. And I call it for that because I like it so much. That's why, you know. But this one I use what you just would call of like a, you can almost picture it as like a topwater action, but just subsurface. So I'm like three or four jerks. Kind of, I call it more of a roll. I just kind of, I don't jerk it like you do maybe like a grub or something. Just more, I call it more like a roll, two or three times, and then like a little pause and let it settle. And as it's settling, it kind of swims down to the bottom. Mm-hmm. It's got a weighted, the hook is weighted in the belly, so it doesn't sink head first. It sinks like a wounded mullet. So mine's more of like what you just called a stop and go. It'd be like twitch, 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 pause, reel up a little bit of slack, twitch, 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 pause. You know, and they hit it all of the above ways. They hit it whether it's moving. They hit it sometimes. Sometimes while I'm letting it sink and I'm reeling up a little bit of slack, all of a sudden there's a fish on there, and I never even felt the bite because I had slack in the line, you know. So usually you feel the bite, though. They hit those things so hard, it's a jolt of electricity. You don't, you know, there's not like, I think I had a bite, you know.
Right.
I don't know if you can say this on the radio or not, but I tell them, they say, what's the bite feel like? I said, it feels like an orgasm. You know when you have one. So. I don't know if you can let that go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's descriptive. And color-wise, what do you – like, is slick lures and you're talking about the size, talking about the Slick Junior, but size and colors, what do you like? What's your preferred go-tos?
It's – well, if I had to carry three, I'd okay. carry one to cover every water situation. They got – I don't know how many colors they have now, but the three I would
all
carry
of them.
Are what they call
– all of them.
Yeah. But I would carry – I mean, you can cover everything with about three of their colors. I carry the B-Cat, which he named after me. It's white, pearl white with the chartreuse tail. That's what I use in low light or off-color water conditions. Then what they call croaker, which is almost the exact same color as a croaker, is a good – we call it a safe color because it's one of those colors where you go like, I don't know, muddy, clear, I can't tell what this is. That's kind of a good natural color. So I carry the croaker, what they call croaker. And then the third one I carry is a real subtle. It's, I think one of the soft plastic companies used to call theirs a, it's like a, almost a translucent purple. And they call it Cool Beans. And I can't remember what the company that had that color out, but that's my like, bright sky, clear water color. So those three colors pretty well cover everything I need. Now, they got some others I carry, too, called Mad Mullet, which is a real natural mullet-looking color. They got one called Perpsicle, which is kind of a mullet, mullet color. Yeah, I don't, you know. Yes, B-Cat's the only cool name they got.
It is, and it's the best. It's, I actually have more of those in my box than any others. All right, so y'all, there's a little primer on wade fishing. The next step, we're going to have to do an addendum show, Bobby, because you know, normally we'd be talking about looking at summer fishing here, but we're not even done with spring.
I was going to say, we may be doing this next quarter just talking about the summer transition. So if it keeps going like this, you know.
For sure.
Like mid-July, we'll be going like, okay, now it's time to maybe start carrying some croakers.
I kind of think that's where we're heading. Captain Bobby, we'll do it again very, very soon. Thank you, man. Thanks for being on today.
Oh, man, thanks for having me on. I always enjoy it.
All right, there he goes. Captain Bobby Abrascato, the one and only from 18 Fishing Adventures. You have a great weekend. We'll do it again next weekend.